It's guest disc jockey interview time now, and here in our studio today, hailing all the way from the great Southwest, is Proctor L. What was the last name, Proctor?
Pops.
Pops? I thought that was a nickname. I noticed that in the car, and I wanted to be sure about it.
Proctor Pops.
Proctor, what do folks call you there? Do you call yourself Proctor on the show, is that all?
Yes, they call me Proctor.
Oh, you say this is old Pops again.
No, I say this is Proctor Pops, everyone.
No, you have a very good show called Tops and Pops.
On Saturday night, I have Proctor Pops' Lid.
And that's
kind of a gag show. I use gimmicks and play a lot of rock and roll, a lot of waltzes, a lot of hillbilly and western country style music, and a lot of marches.
Well, you know, Ray and I love to meet disc jockeys from other parts of the country. The
385th Field Artillery Band. They have a couple of peachy records out.
Uh-huh. And then you have an early morning show out there, too, don't you?
Yeah.
Proctor Pops Rise and Shine.
Proctor Pops' Toaster. That's kind of a morning show.
Breakfast show. Yeah.
Well, I have a light morning batter, play wake-up music, marches, a lot of semi-classical music, and I insert, oddly enough, correct time signals.
Well, you really run the gamut, Proctor Pops. Don't you have a farm show at noontime there?
That's right, I do. Proctor Pops' Flowers.
Uh-huh. And I know that all of them have real good ratings. It really blankets the area out there. And if anyone wants information on how they can buy time...
I have a quarter-hour show every night right after the news where I sell hair tonic called Proctor Pops' Wig.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a direct 15-minute sales pitch on this hair tonic.
But you make it
interesting.
It's guaranteed
to grow hair on a billiard ball.
Have you had any proof that it will?
I have had several billiard balls sent into me with hair on them. But I don't know whether it's a gag... Or, but it really did grow hair. I don't know.
I see. Well, thank you very much, guest disc jockey Proctor Pops.
I'm on my way down to Washington now at three of those billiard balls with hair on them, given to the Smithsonian Institute.
Fine. Well, thanks for dropping by. Another step on our pathway to guest disc jockeydom around the country.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure, and I just wonder if I could put the bite on you.
Good evening. The name of the show is Bob and Ray. It is all on tape. It is not very live.
Nothing live. Hello, I'm Proctor Pops. I'm staying around for your other
show. Oh, I have to reintroduce you, Proctor, because we have a lot of different listeners at this particular time. Ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I was talking about
wait just
lighters.
A minute. Yes, wait a minute, Proctor. On our parade of guest disc jockeys, we're presenting today and saluting one of the Southwest's best-known performers, Proctor Pops, who is on just about all day long, from what I...
I think it would be called split shifts.
You're out in the morning at noontime with a farm show, in the afternoon with a pop show, rock and roll at night.
That's right. Then I have the Betty Bye-Bye show just before sign-off.
That Betty Bye-Bye with Proctor Pops, is that the name of it?
No, it's Proctor Pops in the bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what were you saying about gliders? You brought that up earlier today on another show that we did.
Gliders. When I was a kid, you'd walk up a street. On every porch, there'd be a glider with either an old man sitting on it or an old lady reading the afternoon paper.
Mm-hmm. And the old man would give you the cigar band off the cigar.
Yes, or you'd be smoking a pipe. And you just don't see that anymore, and it's a little part of Americana that I'd like to see come back.
Well, I don't see what this has to do with your work as a disc jockey down there. In the
Well, I'm full of philosophy. I think that's half the secret of my big success on those disc jockey shows that I have.
Aren't you known as the good-hearted, freckle-faced kid?
No.
Because I noticed you didn't have freckles.
No, I'm not good-hearted either, you'll find.
Well, you run now quite a lot of civic affairs down there, dances and things. Where does the money go for this project?
Well, it usually goes into me, right into my own pocket.
In other words, you run these for your own benefit.
I run them for my own benefit.
But don't you make out like they're to benefit some...
Well, I phrase it so that you think it's like a charity.
Yeah.
But when you pin me down, it's not.
Well, is this legal? Have you checked all the legal aspects of it so that you can't
No, I haven't given it much thought in that respect. I report it.
What?
I report all that money.
On your income?
Oh, yeah.
I know that, but I mean, it's kind of misleading to tell people they're contributing to a charity and then it turns out that...
I don't actually phrase it that way,
Bob.
Bob? Hmm. I don't actually phrase it that way, Bob.
How do you phrase it so you get around the problem?
I usually say, don't forget now, Friday night, that big thing I'm running over there for the benefit.
Well, if you don't say benefit of what, right?
No, I just say for the benefit, and people come by.
I see.
I give door prizes, toasters. Last week I gave a pastel-colored refrigerator. No motor in it, but...
Proctor Pops, ladies and gentlemen, our guest disc jockey. If you'd like to stay around, I think
I'd love to. I like to watch you fellas work.
Potato sack race is coming up.
I'll tell you how to run those benefits.
Hey, I think right here we should make mention of the big benefit, Bob. The Bob and Ray benefit that we'll be going to be running this Friday night.
For a wonderful cause, and all of you, of course, within easy traveling distance are invited to attend.
Be held at Grange Hall, Carlisle, Massachusetts. So you all try to get up there. We'll tell you more about it as we learn more about it.
It's a charity thing.
Suffice to say, it's for the benefit of, and we know that you all want to get in back of that.
And incidentally, thanks, Proctor Pops, for dropping by here this evening. I think you've...
Yeah, you're working it okay.
Is that right?
I think that you...
Wait.
Charity,
still on,
Bob, that's wrong.
We're still on the air.
Keep saying benefit.
Benefit.
Right. This Proctor
it's
Pops saying,
the benefit.
So long for now.
See, he is a sharp apple, isn't he? That Proctor Pops.
He does okay for himself.
Well, you gotta get out early in the morning, I guess, if you want to make a buck these days.
Incidentally, that Grange Hall up in Carlisle is a big hall, and it can hold upwards of 400, 500 people. We may get up a train that will leave New York to bring you folks from that area up there to the big thing the Bob and Ray are running for the benefit of.
All right, boys.
So, yes, sir?
You're all under arrest.
But,
As phony as a $3 bill. We've had your...
Well, wait a minute. We've got to sign the show off.
From the Better Business Bureau.
All right, well, we talk to you after we leave the air, okay, sir? Just sit down over there. Sir.
Now, just let me put on these bracelets.
Yeah.
Okay, sir. Come on, Bob.
Where is the gentleman who was picked just before we went on the air by our assistant Wilbur Connolly, young square who works for us?
I do.
Why were you selected, sir? Would you tell us?
Because I know the standings of all the minor league baseball teams as of this date.
Do you want to rattle them off before we...
Texas League, Dallas, Houston, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Tulsa, Shreveport, Austin, and Oklahoma City.
Well, that's as of today, Tuesday.
Southern Association, Atlanta... Birmingham, Memphis, Mobile, New Orleans, Nashville, Chattanooga, Montgomery, in that order.
Boy, you really have a wealth of baseball information.
I don't know the American League, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do you concentrate more on this than on the American
I don't
National
know.
League?
It's just a quirk in my nature.
Mm-hmm. Where's your home, Ed?
Here in New York.
What is your name?
Ed.
Mm-hmm. And you've made it a practice to... study up on statistics, have you?
No, it's just that I just like to rattle off the standings of the minor leagues, that's all. I do it at the slightest provocation.
Well, like, where would you have an opportunity? Does
buses,
anybody ever ask
subway
you?
Subway stations,
You find it pretty easy to get a seat on a bus if you start rattling these off?
Yes, I can clear the bus pretty quick. I get on the bus and stand up there where you put the coin, I say... Indianapolis, Denver, Omaha, Minneapolis, and they all think they're on our cross country bus. They all jump off, and
sure,
I have a bus by myself.
Bus to yourself.
Sure.
I suppose the driver would get a little bit upset at that,
well,
too.
I've even known drivers to get off.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they went for a cop.
Yeah, but this way, have you accumulated quite a few buses?
No, I wouldn't want to become involved in anything like that. That would be
a little
shady.
Shady, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, are you enjoying yourself today here?
Yes, very much.
Good. Well, what do you think of...
Schenectady, Binghamton, Reading, Allentown, Albany, Syracuse, Williamsport, and Johnstown, in that order, Eastern League.
I'm going to step outside.
Where are you going?
Well, you cleared the studio as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't know what to say. I'm here all alone. Except for that fella over there. Now,
It's time to check on the whereabouts of Wally Ballou, who today has gone up to Connecticut to an antique factory. There to talk with the owner and manufacturer. So come in, please. Wally Ballou.
Ballou, here at the antique factory, which seems to be going at full tilt here today as we walk through period furniture of an old and bygone day. Mr. Fertnell, is that your name?
Fertnell, F-E-R-T-N-A-L-L, Fertnell.
I've never known a Fertnell before. You're probably the first Fertnell that I've ever come across.
Well, there are some other Fertnells here in town. There are, I don't know, I imagine there are Fertnells somewhere else in the country, and I would assume they're all relatives.
Kind of an antique name, in other words. And,
Sir Randolph Fertnell came over here many, many years ago.
Uh-huh.
About 1911.
Tell me this, what are you manufacturing most here today? I noticed...
We're making 16th century colonial antiques here now. Old beds, and, old tables and chairs, closets,
That's
things like
television
that.
Cabinet there, isn't it?
What?
Is that a television cabinet?
That's right, yes, sir.
Well, is it authentic antique, or...?
Yes, it's reproduction. But we won't tell anybody that when we sell
them. In other words, you sell these for the real thing.
Oh, sure. It's awfully hard. We put our own scratches on it, and we wax it, re-wax it.
We wax it, I think.
Yes, we do. And then we ship them out.
How about these wormholes in here? How do you create the, simulate the effect of wormholes in the wood?
We use screwdrivers. We also use little drills. And sometimes if we can find a good termite, we'll put them to work on a piece of wood.
Uh-huh. And these pieces, I understand, bring a pretty good price.
You've yes. Oh, yes. There are, you know, antique fanciers who will pay quite a bit of money for one of these phonies.
Uh-huh. And without even knowing that it's not the original piece.
No, but they have just as much enjoyment as though George Washington had actually sat on the chair.
Well, now, for instance, this television cabinet, do you tell people that this goes back to 1600, 1700?
No, we don't. We don't mention it at all.
Has anybody ever raised the point that they didn't have television back then?
Yes, but we say that it was... When the older folks used it, it was to keep dishes in or something like that. And we have hired four gentlemen to actually sleep in the bed one night or to sit on a chair or to look in the mirror or some such. We have a Benjamin Franklin working for us. We have a George Washington. We have a James Madison. And we have a Roland E. Fleuring.
Uh-huh.
And these fellas, actually, now you take George Washington, he comes up here and he sleeps in the bed. And we can actually say that George Washington slept in that bed.
Here we've seen the actual bed that George Washington slept in.
That's right. This George Washington is an 11-year-old kid from Skaneateles, New York.
Here at the Fertnell Antique Factory in Fertnell, Connecticut. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, sir, and I'm sure we've learned something.
I hope so, and it's always a pleasure to have you come by here from your great radio program.
I hope so. This is Wally Ballou returning you to Bob and Rick.
Now to Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, and Radio's Wally Ballou, who has another industrial report. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Dover, Foxcroft, Maine, where we're visiting at the Ace Bullfighter Cape Manufacturing Company, and we're speaking right now with the owner of this establishment.
How do you do? I'm Matthew Ted Weldon.
Ted, if we may call you that, how long have you operated this factory that makes capes for bullfighters?
Well, I started it on a shoestring, more or less, right after I separated honorably, I might point out, from the service. With a GI Bill, I opened up a bullfight cape manufacturing plant.
Seems a little bit off the beaten track to be manufacturing these here at Dover Foxcroft, but I guess... You ship them all to Mexico and that sort of place.
Mexico and Spain, they use a lot of them.
I understand you've just opened up a new outlet in Providence, Rhode Island.
That's right. Well, that's where we put the trimming line. Up here we make just the cape. Down there they put the fancy work on it. I have 60 men employed here, and I have just 12 ladies putting the fancy stuff on them down in Providence.
Well, how did you happen to decide that this was to be your life's work, what you wanted to go in for?
Well, I don't know. It just hit me one day what to do. I had a whole life ahead of me. And I started to write down a list of papers what I'd like to be. Doctor, lawyer, cape maker, shoemaker, automobile manufacturer, owner of several banks. And I checked over and talked it over with my family, and we decided I'd be a cape maker.
Well, you certainly have a bright array of them here. They're all sorts and types. Do you make them different sizes for different size bullfighters?
Or? Yes, that's right. You take a 6'2" bullfighter.
Can we take one of these down and hold it up for the radio audience?
Certainly, there it is. Now, you'll notice this is made from extruded rayon. We put the wet, gooey rayon through a process. Here, you hold it. What are you doing there?
Well, you said to hold it, and it just came away in my hands there.
Well, that's a $65 job you just tore there. Fancy work, it'd be $85.
Certainly didn't mean to ruin a finished piece of merchandise like this.
This here, if you'd be careful from now on, Mr. Bellum. Over here, this one is made from just plain extruded sackcloth. And
that's probably for the fellow who's just starting out bullfighting.
That's right, a fellow who doesn't want to spend too much money until he knows whether he can fool in their bulls.
Uh-huh.
And there's no sense in going out there and having an expensive cape torn to ribbons by an angry bull. The fellow who'll buy the expensive ones is the fellow who knows his way around a bull ring.
I guess you're right there.
Nick, I'm right there.
Nice talking to you, Ted. And all good luck in the future with your business.
Well, if you want to talk to the ladies down in Providence, you can take your equipment down there.
Thanks again.
One of the most unusual people that we came across during this past week was a gentleman farmer in Henderson, Vermont. And the following was taped on location at his farm by me just a few days ago. Wonder if you'd roll a tape, please. Hello. One of the most unusual people we've come across in the past week is this farmer who's standing here with me in Henderson, Vermont. Would you give us your name first, please, sir?
Yes. Nelson Malaman.
Mr. Malaman, I understand that you run what is the only one we've ever heard of, a four-leaf clover farm. Is that right?
That's right. I have hybrid four-leaf clovers that I have developed over the years.
And you sell them for good luck?
Good luck charms. They put them in these
plastic
keychains and like that.
I know that you said this was going to be a banner year for you. Why did you use the term was going to be?
Well, unfortunately, we had a few tough breaks happen. For one thing, my first load of four-leaf clovers that I had my assistant run over in a truck over to Bellows Falls. We put them on the train there for New York.
Uh-huh. These were in bulk. They weren't
processed. Went off a cliff.
The truck went off a cliff. This was one of the big orders that you had planned.
The biggest order, and it was my whole first crop.
Uh-huh.
I'm working on my second crop now. Fortunately, I've been laid up, and I couldn't be on the job to supervise the thing.
You've been ill?
Well, I suppose you could say that. I was coming in the door of the greenhouse one day, and the horseshoe fell out and hit me on the head.
I notice you still have the bandage there.
Carcoon.
Now, you certainly have what looks to be a good growing crop out there, although...
Well, it was going pretty good.
You were telling me just before we went on the air that the crop-dusting plane crashed.
Yes, it did. The pilot was okay, but the plane is beyond repair.
Well, what were you dusting the crops for in the first place?
Well, because the deadly thrips had set
what?
In. Deadly thrips. If they attack your four-leaf clovers, they eat them off right at the root, where the root comes up out of the earth, the ground.
Ruin your
humus.
Crop.
Mm-hmm. Humus.
Well, now, this crop, then, is pretty well shot as far as...
It's pretty bad. The whole year will have to be written off. It's
But you are starting some potted clovers there in the greenhouse, I know.
That's right. That's the only hope now is to grow them inside.
That will save you. It would
it will
put
another,
you through.
It will even out a year.
Uh-huh. This could be... what was that?
That's tough luck.
That
telephone pole just fell over and through the greenhouse.
Right through the center of the greenhouse.
Yeah.
I don't think you could pick the clovers out of that.
Not without cutting yourself. No, I guess I better forget it for this year.
Well, it's been interesting to talk to you, and a lot of good luck to you, Mr. Malaman.
Thank you. I'll need it.
We had a great deal of mail since Webley Webster's last appearance, at which time he gave us a book review, and he's here today. Webb, quite a few people have requested that you give us another one, you with the help of the Webley Webster players. I see you have them assembled out there in the big studio. Do you have something for us?
Yes, that's right, Bob. I thought we might dramatize what I think is one of the most interesting scenes in a new book that I'm going to review for you, Tom Swift and his Atomic Fertilizer Spreader.
Oh, this is one of the Tom Swift series, of course, so familiar with the younger generation and the older.
Well, it's the latest. I think. The latest Tom Swift.
It must be.
He never employed atomic power before.
Uh-huh.
Energy.
Well, now,
atomic energy.
Where does this scene take place? In his laboratory or in...
No, they're about 4 days out at sea as we look in on the players now, and they'll dramatize, I think, the most dramatic part of the whole book.
Begging your pardon, Captain.
What be you want, matey?
Well, we're 4 days out, and we still don't know where we're going. Isn't it time you open the sealed orders?
Why?
Oh! 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 Oh!
Now get up off on the deck and talk to me with a civil tongue in your head.
Digging your pot.
Belay, matey. What you mean coming by here and giving the good captain orders?
Well, it's only that the men are getting a little shaky, sir. They want to know where they're going.
You...
No. Oh. No. Digging your pardon, sir. It was only a civil question I was asking.
Get up off the deck.
Right, sir.
Have you all had your grog today?
That's right, sir.
Why?
No. No. Oh. Oh. Taking it easy, sir.
Now I think maybe you'll be keeping that civil tongue in your head.
Aye, aye, sir.
Take off, you down to the galley. Get me some food.
Aye, aye, sir.
Why?
No.
And that's the scene, huh?
That's it. I think that's the most dramatic scene I've ever heard or read about.
Well, where was Tom Swift?
I recommend it to everybody from 6 to 6.
Well, that's all right, but...
Tom Swift, that is Atomic Fertilizer Spreader.
Another Webley Webster book review. We're now back inside.
Farmer takes a wife, the farmer takes a wife, hi-ho the derry-o, the farmer takes a wife. Once again, with his distinctive theme, it's time for Agriculture News with our Bob and Ray expert, Dean Archer Armstead of the Lackawanna, New York field station.
Hello again, Bob, and hello again, friends everywhere.
Well, Dean, once again, of course, fall is really upon us. You can feel it in the weather.
Oh, certainly in the pretty air, and there's pop and a pumpkin.
And I know there's quite a few questions here from our listeners who are perplexed about various problems around the farm.
I'm not to be here for, Bob, but compared to reach some of the letters, I'd be very pleased and happy to take a few moments of my time to answer them.
Well, one in particular here is concerned over storing alfalfa for feed for the winter. I wonder if you have any...
Well, that, of course, would be peculiar to one section of the country. However, I assume that we have enough blueprints in that section of the country of the alfalfa farmers that I should spend a little time with them.
Go ahead.
To store alfalfa, it would be best to get it in from the almond, because, if you know, you get a lot of field bugs.
Yeah, and keep it dry, I suppose,
too. That's right, because we'd get alfalfa rot.
And, We threw that one?
True, definitely.
One or two others are concerned over fruit trees, whether they should prune them here in the fall or wait until next spring.
Well, it's a matter of taste.
It's a matter of taste.
Whether you want to prune them in the fall or prune them in the spring. Now, I personally prune my apple trees in the spring. And I pruned my peach trees, my pepper trees, in the fall.
In other words, it would depend on the type of tree, the type of fruit.
And, of course, where you're located. Whether you have severe or mild winters, so it makes a real difference in that respect.
I see. Well, now, is there any parting word you have for the farmers who are listening to us right at this moment and who follow your words of advice with great sincerity?
Yeah. Goodbye.
Dean Archer Armstead of the Lackawanna Field Station, our Bob and Ray Special Agricultural Consultant. We're speaking to you now from the sound stage in Hollywood, where the new motion picture All or Nothing at All is being filmed. Of course, the movie, as you probably have read, stars young Lurch McBain, a new teenage idol of America's millions. Lurch has kindly consented to give us just a moment or two to chat about the picture and himself before the climactic scene of this highly exciting film is shot. I think they're almost ready over there, Lurch. We won't take too much of your time. I would like to know just how it feels to become a star overnight.
Well, it takes a little getting used to, of course, Bob, but it's a thrill, and I'm excited. Of course, I'm just ecstatic over this wonderful vehicle they've given me here, and All or Nothing at All.
I understand this is a wonderful picture, and that this scene that we're about to actually see being shot is the most exciting in the picture. Is that right?
Well, there are, of course, many high points in the movie, but as you say, this is the climactic scene.
We're certainly looking forward to it. Have you noticed any change in your life since becoming such an overnight star? I mean, money-wise?
Well, of course, money is important, and when I got my first big check not too long ago, I went right downtown, got a haircut, and had my shoe shine, bought a shirt.
And do you find that you're behaving any differently toward your friends or family?
I think so. I have,
you have
a little swelled head.
Gotten a big head over the whole thing. Well, now they're calling for you over on the set, and I think that we'd better quiet down, because any moment now, they call
it 16. You,
this motion
here,
picture, All or Nothing at All, starring Lurch McBain, will be shot, and we will hear it as it is being shot, as you will see it on your sound.
Quiet on the set!
Orchestra, this is a take.
Okay, that's it. Goodbye.
Cut! Nice!
Oh, terrific, Lurch.
Terrific!
So we have seen the climactic scene of All or Nothing at All, starring Lurch McBain from the Hollywood sound set. In this year's physical year, Bob and Ray's scientific department has been following very closely the activities of Professor Onslow Groggins in Herkimer, New York, who is about to attempt, within the next few weeks, a trip to the moon. And we brought our microphones here again this week to chat with the professor. I understand, Professor, you've added a few new luxuries to your spaceship here.
Hello, Bob, and welcome back. It's awfully good to see you again.
Could we go inside, first of all? I'd like to see what changes you've made.
Sure, let's go right in through the hatch.
The heavy automatic hatch, which you probably can hear in the background, enabling us to...
Better let me go in first,
all right,
Bob.
I'll climb in after you then.
Okay, now I'll close it down. There we are.
Gone to a great deal of expense in remodeling the ship after the first two or three unsuccessful tries.
Well, you like it?
I certainly do.
The drapes here were picked out by my sister.
The new linoleum is certainly outstanding, too.
Yeah.
You hear right. That's a grandfather's clock.
Grandfather's clock, yeah.
Well, of course, time is probably the most important thing on this trip. And I had to have a good clock. And this one's been in the family over 150 years.
I've been reading in the press releases that your publicity department has sent out about the new improved high-efficiency jet-propelled engines that you've installed.
Well, now, that, of course, is wrong. These are not jet-propelled. These are an L-head four-cylinder engine.
Well, I think maybe you'd better speak to your press department then.
Well, I don't have any press department at all, Bob.
Well, someone is sending out releases about you.
Well, it could be the folks here in Herkimer. You know, they think I'm pretty much of a jerk, and they probably want to make a fool out of me.
I wonder if could we hear the roar of the powerful motors that will propel you toward the moon?
Well, you frighten me. It's not so much of a roar, but as a gentle ticking sound. As I pointed out to you in an earlier broadcast, Bob, these are converted, as you know, power lawnmower motors that I've assembled here.
Well, now, this is starter button here. What would happen if I...
Well, I push that, and then I turn the crank like this. Well, you'll hear the gentle, not roar, of the powerful motors.
Make it much more quiet for your trip.
And I have the crank inside, too, which is important, because on the way to the moon, you might bump into some bum weather. You can want to be outside cranking it.
I understand that. Maybe you can hear the... What's happening exactly there, Professor?
I'm just turning over.
Something has stopped. The clock just struck one, Professor. Does that mean anything? Is signal?
It means I got to go back to work. 1 o'clock.
Well, we'll be following. When you get word of the exact date of your departure, will you let us know?
I hope to do it next Tuesday. Leave around 8 o'clock at night. Now, that'll get me to the moon. Oh, maybe the next day sometime. But you'll see me go over New York.
All right, and wave if you get a chance.
Sure.
I hold the Dario, the farmer in the Dell. Here once again is Bob and Ray, Agricultural Director, Dean Archer Armstead of the Lackawanna, New York Field Station. Dean, so you brought Rob and I Pickett along with you.
That's right, Rob. You're Robert, of course, works with me up there at the field station, Bob.
Has something to do with the subject of your talk today?
That's right.
What? Exactly.
Today we're going to take up the question of whether to burn the leaves or turn them into a compost pile.
Well, of course, that... does present problems year after year.
Well, I suppose it does. You mean from a safety point of view, whether it's safe to burn leaves?
Well, of course, there's always a fire hazard as far as that's concerned, but...
You have to get permission in a lot of places, I understand, from the fire department.
Well, I'm not concerned particularly with local fire laws. I'm thinking now of the efficacy of either making a compost pile, because leaves turn into a bit too much.
Yes, of course, leaves, other grass clippings and so forth, when used in the
Will turn to humus, too, but I think the best humus is leaves, as you know. Good old forest, you can take down your wonderful humus.
And, tell them what you recommend, Dean.
I recommend they make a compost pile out of it.
Oh, it's, don't burn, but just pile it up.
That would be my advice, yes. But I think...
Put a piece of burlap over it.
But just a moment, we'll go ahead, Mr. President.
Put a piece of burlap over it for the wind. Hold in the heat.
Well, that is a good idea, I suppose, putting a cover over it so the heat will stay in there.
Don't forget to put a little lime down.
Put a good lime down.
We'll keep it sweet. All right. Compost is the best, as you know. It will take the soil. If you have a high acid content soil, to your humus and your block.
I hear our theme sneaking in over there, so that means our time must be up, Dean, but I think you've given quite a lot of good advice to those who have been writing in. Next week, next week, I wonder if you would talk about your trailing arbutus.
All right, I'll be glad to talk about
that. Thank you very much, Bob.
Bob and Ray, scientific report time now, and the fellow that we've been following for the past two or three months is here with us, Professor Groggins from Herkimer, New York. Professor, it's nice to know you're not upset with us after leaving in such a huff a few weeks back.
Well, I want to correct that impression. I'm certainly not in a huff, but...
Well, you did walk out of here, you'll remember, with a chip on your shoulder. You thought we were making fun of you for trying to build a rocket ship that would go to the moon. I guess you've changed your opinion now.
Well, no, I'm firmly convinced, however, that I was on the wrong tack there. I've consulted what I think are greater minds. I went down to Washington in view of the recent projection into the atmosphere of
And you're going ahead with your own plans.
Well, it means now that, of course, we have to increase our pace. We've been plodding along up there at Herkimer, thinking there was no great urgency to it. But now I think it's
full speed.
Well,
you say we, you mean you have been plodding.
Myself.
You haven't had any help with this. Well, in other words, you've changed your design for the spaceship. You've made some...
I learned years ago it isn't polite to keep using I all the time. And
use
when
the
I
editorial refer... we.
That's right. When I say we, I mean me.
Well, now, what changes exactly have you brought about in your spaceship, and why do you think that it will be more practical now?
The we?
You, yes.
Well, we feel that we are on the wrong idea. For instance... we
I
had everything.
To just say I, because some people in Herkimer might not want to be associated with you. You understand?
I understand. Well, I thought the way we were going, we would never make it. For instance, I realized that we were tremendously underpowered. So I pulled out the lawn power mowers there, the
motor lawn,
the lawn power of the.
You were using lawnmower motors.
Lawnmower motors is right. We pulled those out, and I went ahead and put in a V8 engine, generating 115 horses.
Well, you were telling me something just before we went on the air about the front porch that
right.
you had on that. What about that?
Well, the porch will be more or less our first stage. When we reach an altitude of 18,000 feet, that porch will fall off.
In other words, from 18,000 feet onward to the moon, you won't be able to sit out on the porch and enjoy the trip.
No, it'll be all business in there. Of course, that porch will burn up when it hits the heavier atmosphere as it gets closer to the Earth.
It'll
burn up and probably fall as charred wood.
I see. Well, that's about all the time we have, Professor, and I think now you're on the right track.
And I think so.
Look forward to another report.
We're very happy with it.
Thank you, Professor Groggins. Good luck on your trip back to Herkimer. That's the closet you're walking into.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The other door. Well, let's take a look at the sports scene, as long as we have a very appropriate guest for this time. Manly L. Cheswick is your name, sir?
Yeah.
And the card that you filled out, you said that you are a football team mascot. Just what do you mean by that?
Well, I represent...
Pick up a little bit.
Well, I represent our mascot as a human. Our mascot is a bear. And at halftime at all Stamford games, I run out on the field looking like a cuddly bear and roll around the 50-yard line.
That, of course, explains the cute little suit that you wore up here today with the bushy tail there and the little floppy brown ears. How long have you been doing this, Manly? And
well,
how old are you?
Well, I'm 27, but you have to make a few allowances there because I had to repeat 2 or 3 years. But I have been a cuddly bear going on 7 years now.
Who suggested this to you, if I can be so bold as to ask?
Head cheerleader.
The head cheerleader?
Well, he said he asked for volunteers one day. We're all sitting there at a pep rally. And
he said, who would like to be a cuddly bear?
Who would like to be a cuddly bear?
At that time, I understand, you were the star center on the football team. Is that...
Well, no, I had turned out for football, but I didn't like it.
Oh, I see.
It hurt.
Uh-huh. So you settled for the...
cuddly. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing.
Well, you're winking at your engineer there.
Well, everybody.
I didn't come up here to be made a fool out of.
Getting a big kick out of
you. So I'm a cuddly bear.
Costume. Do you wear
one Indian wrestle?
No. Do you wear this on the street?
No, I don't wear it on the street. I wear it at the football game. And
Of course, a lot of people laugh, like you're doing now, Abney. Think I'm a...
Well, I'm not laughing at you. I know you take this all in the spirit of good, clean fun, too. Seems to be rather ridiculous for a grown man to be parading around in a bear suit like this.
It's not a bear suit. It's a cuddly bear suit. It's well, made out of a very soft fabric. And you have to be a pretty good man to fill this out. I'm probably the biggest cuddly bear there is.
I guess you are. It certainly will keep you warm on a cold fall day on the gridiron.
Yeah, laughing again.
Well, Manly, where's your next game?
Very funny guy.
Where can we look forward to seeing you?
Very funny.
Manly Cheswick, ladies and gentlemen.
I never liked the program anyway. I'll tell you that right now.
Hello there.
Hello, Natalie. It's
remember me?
Song saying time, I guess. Natalie attired, ladies and gentlemen, with her accompanist Eddie, and with what kind of a song for this warm week?
Well, typical, wonderful summer song.
In the good old summertime?
Well, you must have seen it. I did, yes.
I was looking over your shoulder.
Well, why wouldn't you let me introduce it?
Well, you can introduce it.
Well, I know, but you've taken all the fun out of it now. Yes, it is in the good old summertime.
Now, is this a particularly different arrangement, or, Natalie?
Nothing.
Is this a new arrangement, or different, or anything different about it?
No. Of course, it features Eddie on the drums, and that's about it. So, if you're prepared for it, let's swing, Eddie.
All right.
There's a time in each year that we always hold dear, good old summertime, with the birds and the trees.
Oh, I don't remember that part of it.
And the sweet scented breeze. What?
I don't remember this part of it. I remember in the good old summertime, in the good old
summertime. Well, that's the chorus. This is.
Oh, you're doing the verse, too.
Good. Why don't you
All right, well,
try out?
Go ahead.
Let me just do it my way. I've never known you to be such a pest.
Go ahead.
Eddie, please. There's a time in each year that we always hold dear. Good old summertime.
I don't think I ever heard that
with
part
the birds,
of it before.
I don't
as a
care
matter
whether
fact
you ever heard it before. But the all right, Eddie. With the birds and the trees and the sweet scented breezes, good old summertime. When your day's work is over, then you're in clover and life is one beautiful rhyme. No trouble annoying, each one is enjoying the good old summertime. This is the part you probably know.
Well, let's see. I don't remember any of it up to here.
Eddie? In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime.
That's the part I know.
Strolling
yes
through the shady lanes with your
sure
baby mind.
Line, yeah.
Will you dry up?
Who, me? I'm Mr. Tyler.
No, you're all right, Eddie. It's this fellow here.
Go ahead.
You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie. In the good old summertime.
Well, that's our song said this week by Natalie Attired, who until next time says...
I hope you mind your business next time.
Wally Blue, our radio reporter, has stationed himself up in Rehoboth, Massachusetts, where he's at a factory. So, Wally, if you'd come in, please, take it away.
Dubby, Wally Ballou speaking, and we'll find that story out here where they make them. We're talking with the foremost ventriloquist dummy manufacturer in the country today, and I believe you told me you'd prefer not to mention your name, is that right? And is there any reason for that?
Well, there's no special reason for that,
Mr.
Ballou.
Something about people laugh at you and you say you make dummies?
When I say that I'm a dummy manufacturer, it brings a certain amount of... I don't know, ridicule. Although I've made a very good living at it, I've managed to accumulate X thousands of dollars in the bank, which is a lot more than those you laugh at me can
well,
say.
Well, I can understand that.
So
that
you pipe and smoke it.
Just refer to you as
the two
a...
kids at college. I have
well,
a late model car with fins.
Right.
I'm doing all right.
We'll refer to you as the W manufacturer, then.
I don't think you will.
Well,
that's the kind of stuff I don't like, and you're working with
I
the
see
engineer now. It's
think I'm some kind of a fool.
We're standing right now in the testing room, the final step before these dummies go out to the ventriloquists around the country. Is that right?
That's right.
What do you do here, sir?
Test the dummies before they go out to the ventriloquists in the country.
Could you be showing us how this works?
Well, I'm not a very good ventriloquist myself.
Well, it's all right. It's just the effect that we get on radio. It wouldn't make any difference anyway, you see.
Well, now this...
Your lips move a little. Who cares?
Well, mine will, because I'm not very good. All right, now this fella here...
That's a cute one.
Sailor suit.
Is that consigned to any ventriloquist that we might have heard of?
Well, any ventriloquist who would like to do a bunch of sailor jokes would buy this fella.
I see.
All right, now I have him on my knee, and I'll say, how are you? Fine.
What?
Fine. See how it
Well, happens? I saw your lips move there.
Well, of course you'll see my lips move. I'm not
well,
a
ventriloquist. Well, that isn't very good dummy, then, is it?
Well, the dummy
is... To me, it doesn't look like it was coming out of the dummy's mouth.
Well,
By that I mean, the illusion wasn't created very effectively.
Well, I think you're a little confused.
Would that be a defect? Would you throw that one out?
It's no defect. This is a very good dummy. I explained to you, I thought.
Well, try it again. Let me see if we can get the effect there.
Well, sailor, going ashore? Yes.
Sounds just like you, too. There's no difference in the voice at all.
Well, of course not. I'm not a ventriloquist. I just make the dummies. Hey, waking up the engineer again, huh?
This is Radio's Wally Ballou, who has been speaking with a dummy manufacturer in Rehoboth, Massachusetts.
You're looking for it, fella.
Returning you.
Judging from the questions that have poured into our wall-to-wall carpeted offices here in New York, you folks are asking Bob and Ray to help you with your gardening problems now that fall is here and there are certain things to be done. And our garden expert, Dean Archer Armstead of the Lackawanna, New York Field Station, is here with us at this time. Dean, it's a pleasure to see you again after a long summer. I hope you had a good vacation, didn't you?
Well, Bob, we had a very nice vacation. But now I think that probably we should get right to the questions that have come into the office here so that we may ask them for you.
Well, a lot of folks, of course, have asked just what is the first step to be taken in getting the garden cleaned up for the fall and winter.
Well, let's cover first the lawn. Do you have any equipment over the lawn?
Yes, sir. A lot of folks say, well, is there anything I can put on crabgrass to kill it over the winter?
Oh, well, of course, it's too late.
That's a big problem around here, of course.
Of course, there's crabgrass in this particular part of the country. Now it's too late.
Too late
for
what?
I didn't come down here 2-3 weeks ago.
Well, what do you mean?
I suppose to get after that before it goes to seed.
Oh, I see. In other words, if it has gone to seed...
If it's gone to seed...
It's going to come up again.
It's going to be up next year, and of course, come next August, then you can cloud it.
There's quite a lot of comment here about the proper way to begin a mulch pile. I wonder if you could go into that in just
a little detail. Well, I think for any farmer, or anybody who's interested in the ground and what the ground can produce for it, that you must have an adequate mulch.
Well, is this the time to mulch? Are you telling us that in those words?
Well, I'm praying now is the time to...
You're nodding your head. I assume that's an affirmative yes.
Well, you're nodding your head. I don't know what that means at all.
No, I just mean this is the time to start
the grass
clippings and that sort of thing.
With the grass clippings and that sort of thing to mulch around your bushes. Remember, you can't mulch too much.
Well, I guess that's...
If anything, you can mulch not enough.
About it, and from our agriculture expert, the Lackawanna, New York Field Station, Dean Archer Armstead, a big thank you to you, sir.
And a very big welcome to you.
Well, our Bob and Ray staff has been busy on fall features for the past week, and one of those which you have requested most is the Webley Webster Book Review, which... Of course, has been quite popular in the past, and Webb, I am looking forward to a fall and winter of great books brought to life in vivid description by you on these weekly visits.
You put it real pretty, Bob. Well, as you know, in the fall season, most of the publishers go to work to get out a lot of books in the fall because people are back inside the house and they read.
Webley suggests that people in the fall are ready to settle down and read a good book now.
Oh, Bob, you don't have to translate for me. Well, people know what I'm saying.
Well, maybe it's a little difficult for some
of them. That gets my goat. I don't know if I've ever told you that.
All right, I won't.
But every time I say something, you say, what Webley means to say, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, all right, I won't.
They know what I'm saying.
You're taking all the time now. Let's get, what book have you got to review for this week?
The Fanny Farmer Cookbook.
Mm-hmm. This then would have to do with food, and what recipe do you like best about?
Well, there's so many wonderful recipes. I think on page 20, though, is the most interesting part of the whole book.
Uh-huh.
This ship is at sea for about 4 or 5 days. And as we look in on them...
Ship at sea for in the Fanny Farmer Cookbook?
That's right.
You sure you have the right book? You're reviewing the right one?
Look, you mind your business and all my mind.
But I see the Webley Webster players over there. What are they?
They're here to dramatize the what I think is the most interesting part of the book. Sort of to
dramatize a cookbook, huh?
Well, that's what I'm going to do.
All right.
Page 48, then. It's shortly after 4 bells, and the ship's at sea for about 8 days. And we look in, and...
You sent for me, Captain?
That's right, matey. Take a look at this here chart.
Why, sir, you got the chart upside down.
Why, you...
No, no.
You'll keep a civil tongue in your head when you talk to the good captain of this tub.
Begging your pardon, Captain, I just took a quick glance at the chart there.
I want you to take a good look at this chart, matey. Tell the captain where we are.
Well, if it were me, sir, I'd say we're about 200 miles south of Hatteras, sir.
What do you mean, if it be you? What kind of lingo is that to say to the good captain?
Will you ask me farewell?
Why, you...
No!
Get up off the deck, matey. Try to keep a civil tongue in your head. Now then...
Begging your pardon, sir.
What be we have to eat?
Well, we got some corned beef below, sir. A bit of blood pudding. Yeah. And some pilot crackers.
Why, you...
No.
That's no bill of fare to recite to the cap'n, mate. Now get ye out of here.
All right, sir.
So, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
It's exciting, yeah, but
that's a Fanny Farmer cookbook. Get it at any bookstore, Garrett.
Right now, we're speaking from Hobby Corner with Mr. Standish Obermeyer. We may remember was with us some months back and told us of his odd and unusual collection of wrong labels for various products. I remember, Stan, just say hello, if you will.
How do you do, everybody? And Bob, it's great to be back here, and I might point out... Here, let me get my...
You've added quite a few to your
yes.
past collection. I remember you told us you found some bean cans where the bean... The word beans is spelled B-E-E-N.
That's right.
What have you added?
Well, here's an interesting one that's come along recently. This was around a cake of soap, and it's spelled S-O-P-E. And I don't know how many of these
rarity,
got out.
I guess. Couldn't have been too many of those
this
before
we
spotted it.
This is a real collector's item. I have here a glass jar, vacuum packed, of course.
Never been opened, has it?
No. Contains Harvard beets. But notice how the beets are spelled. B-E-A-T-S.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Is that
mistake.
The first one of that type that you've come across?
I've never come across a beets label misspelled before.
Mm-hmm. What's this one that looks like codfish cakes here? What's so unusual and different about that?
Well, it is codfish cakes. But on the outside, you'll notice it says tomatoes for stewing.
How did you discover that inside, instead of tomatoes, were codfish cakes?
Well, I had bought two of them. And actually, to use at home. And when I opened it up and found the codfish cakes, I knew I had another prize winner.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another one. I have asparagus.
And here's another one in the fish variety. I see canned perch, and it's spelled P-U-R-C-H. Huh?
But I think this best one here is ketchel, tomato ketchel.
Tomato ketchel.
Well, I put an L on there.
I hardly know what that would be. Well, good luck in your continued search for these strange...
Bob, as I get them, I'll hurry back here and report to all your many listeners.
Thank
you.
It's
a pleasure to be here.
Standish Obermeyer. One of the most unusual personages that our Bob and Ray vast staff has come up with, probably in the last 5 years,
is seated here on the table with me now, a gentleman from Lansing, Michigan, I believe, whose name is Mr. Prentice L. Wilson. Mr. Wilson, will you say hello?
How do you do, everybody?
And I might explain that Mr. Wilson is the shortest man that our staff has ever uncovered, standing in his stocking feet, in their cute little socks, too, about 11 inches. Is that right, sir?
Now, let me hasten to caution you that I am not what you might call an oddity, in that I don't like to make a show of myself.
I understand that...
Referring to my cute little stockings...
Yes.
...will only hold me up to ridicule.
I wasn't trying to...
I'll treat you as a gentleman. I trust it's reciprocated.
Standing as you do, 11 inches, I think you're just slightly short of 11 inches, isn't that true? Present some problems to you, and I think our listeners would like to know, aside from the fact that, well, for instance, you have to sit here on the edge of the ashtray on our broadcasting table to reach the microphone, are there any other things that complicate your daily life, Mr. Wilson?
I have runways set up in my home, excuse me, so that I can go from room to room or visit with people who are paying a
You do entertain quite frequently, do you, sir?
Yes, of course, in my business, it's practically
of
essential.
Course. Sure.
Well, I have these runways through the living room, dining room, butler's
pantry,
kitchen.
I believe you told me before the show that you had one up to the bar, is that right?
That's right.
What's your recipe, let's say, for a good, a good Manhattan?
Well, a good Manhattan, I...
take for yourself, I mean...
For myself. I'd take one-third a thimbleful of sweet vermouth, then just a dash of dry vermouth, and then a complete thimbleful of you-know-what, and a dash of, not a dash, actually, a spray of bitters.
What kind of, like 2 cc's or something?
Or it'd be less than that.
Less than that. So, Wilson, a very big thank you for dropping by, and we want to thank you for taking the time out to drop
I might here. Point out that I don't usually... go on the air to be interviewed in this way, and I wonder if you'd point out that I don't want to hear from any of the listeners.
All right, fine, sure.
The mail only embarrasses me and the missus.
All right, fine. And there he goes, walking to the other end of the desk in his little half-inch shoes.
Now cut out that little half-inch stuff.
Prentice
like
L. Wilson, gentleman 11 inches tall, and our guest here at this time. Now back inside...
And now it's over to the Bob and Ray Sports Desk and Biff Burns.
Sports fans, this is your eyes and ears of the press box, Biff Burns. And with World Series time just around the corner, today we have a very interesting guest, not of the ball-playing variety, but a gentleman who plays a big part in any World Series. His name is Mendelssohn Bach, and he has agreed to chat with us briefly about his... work, Mendelssohn. It's a pleasure to see you. I know I've seen your work many, many times.
Well, thank you very much, Biff. It's always a pleasure to be on the air with you. And I wish you'd fire ahead with your questions there, and I'll try to answer them as honestly as I can.
I'm going to fire away a lot of questions at you, Mendelssohn, and I'm sure that you'll be glad to answer them as I fire them at you. The first thing is, of course, are you busy on this year's World Series yet?
Well, of course, my work is being held up this year, Beth, because we don't know which way to turn. In other words, the National League or the Senior Loop is still up in the air. At least we think it is until the final gun will be fired, and pretty much so in the other league, too. So we've had to go to some great expense this year and print up some extra tickets.
You work more or less undercover, I'm told, Mendelssohn. Your work seems to seep out through strange sources. Could you go into that a little bit deeply?
Be very glad to answer that. That's right. We do most of our work in my cellar. And what I do, of course, is counterfeit World Series tickets, Biff. And I haven't, as you know, I didn't know whether to print Milwaukee or St. Louis or New York or Chicago or...
Quite a problem. And what is that going to develop into this year?
We couldn't take any chances. We've gone ahead and as far back as June, we started turning out World Series tickets for every team.
So you are covered in any event, no matter who wins.
That's right. Now, of course, after the series... we get a lot of money as souvenirs, for instance, selling Washington World Series tickets. A lot of laughs, a lot of Pittsburgh people buy the Pittsburgh World Series tickets and laugh it up. I get 50, 60 cents a piece for those.
Something to kind of hang in the game room and laugh at.
A lot of people frame them, put them under their coffee table glass, so forth.
You were telling me a while back that this year you're running into a particular problem in the fact that you've been so rushed at the last minute. What's that going to involve?
Well, that will involve, of course, extra expense and... We can't color up the tickets until we see what the real one looks like. And
in other words, this year's counterfeiting job may be a little bit shoddy. Is that right?
That's right. The printing and the colored ink and so forth will run in many instances and will be a very cheap imitation of the real ticket.
So the advice is keep them out of the rain wherever possible.
That's right.
Well, that's about the story from the Sports Desk fans, and this is Biff Burns thanking Mendelsohn.
Well, you're entirely welcome.
The time, and saying until next time, this is Biff Burns saying until next time, so long.
Ray, did you notice that familiar figure outside there trying to get in?
Where have I seen him before?
You know who it is. It's Captain Parker Gibbs, the fish for Thanksgiving man.
Oh, he must be out of work by now.
You want to come on in through the swinging door there,
come on in here,
Captain Gibbs.
Talk to us for a while.
Captain Gibbs had an idea that he's going to try to get the public educated to serving fish for Thanksgiving.
How are you, Captain?
Pretty good. You can skip all that now.
Well, I thought so.
It
was such a flop.
That was a true flop, as you say. I've forgotten that. I've been hired by another group. And...
Oh, you've left the fish industry, have you?
That's right. Of course, the fish hasn't left me entirely, has it?
Oh, wind of that.
Well, of course...
Who are you connected with now?
I'm with the Pizza Institute of America, Bob.
I see.
And we're out now to try to educate the public, to bring them around to serving pizza for Christmas rather than the traditional turkey.
Well, Captain Gibbs,
Well, you know.
I know.
There are 17 varieties of pizza.
Yes.
All the way up from the plain, up to mushrooms and...
Anchovy.
Anchovy. You can put almost anything on.
Sausage.
What?
Sausage?
Sausage, yes.
But look, these
and,
things you've been associated with...
people like pizza. Why,
people do,
they,
but for Christmas, it isn't... It's like fish for Thanksgiving. It isn't a practical thing to...
Well, it can be served piping hot, and you can have as many pizzas as you want, depending on how many people you're entertaining at your festive table. And... you can drink almost anything with pizza, water and milk and coffee or anything else.
Any of your other beverages. Well, I don't know. We're happy to...
But it is festive. It's holiday. You can color a pizza so that it has more festive meaning than a brown turkey. Put it that way, Buster.
All right, but whoever ate a green pizza, I mean, wouldn't want to do that either.
You could, of course.
Yes.
You could. There are many wonderful, harmless food dyes on the market now.
Well, it wouldn't be too appetizing, I don't think, Captain. I wish you could direct your energies to something a little more
Well, all I'd like to say is just to let the idea out, let the people think about it for a while. We'll see how it goes over.
Swell.
Think of pizza for Christmas,
you
will you, friends?
Captain Parker Gibbs from Gloucester, Massachusetts. And now back inside.